Listen to the voices of our world.
The Middle East, the people basically want, all they want is someone who's going to run the country and help them live a better life.
Democracy, I think, is a wonderful philosophy to export. To sort of drag it around the world is not really going to work.
For them, democracy is not exactly a value, but I don't think they honestly believe that there is such a thing as a government by the people, and I don't even think they really want it.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Right now, elementary school kids from sea to shining sea all across the United States are reading in their textbooks and learning from their teachers that they are living in a democratic republic, or a democracy. And as the commander-in-chief of the most powerful democracy on the planet, President Bush, has stated that one of his end goals regarding our actions in Afghanistan and Iraq is to spread democracy in the Middle East. There have been elections in both countries. Do these signal lasting changes? Or might they collapse with the withdrawal of American troops? Well, nobody knows the answer to that yet. Today we'll talk about the prerequisites to democracy and whether or not democracy can be forcibly installed. We'll talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, war correspondent, and author Peter Arnett, and then with a Mary Knoll priest living and working in Egypt, Father Doug May.
I remember the feeling of community brewing, of democracy happening.
A simple truth. You can't give what you don't have. A nation cannot export a good it does not possess. Nor can a country mentor other nations in values not practiced at home. That said, the form of administration we are endeavoring to spread to the Middle East is defined as a form of government in which political power resides in all the people and is exercised by them directly or is given to their elected representatives. While we still wear the democracy label proudly, we are swiftly running out of many of the traits that essentially put the D in democracy. We have slid to 31st on the annual Reporters Without Borders list of countries said to have a free press. And it appears the slide continues. As a phony credentialed reporter was planted in the White House press room, the administration contracted several freelance reporters to contrive news items, and that worked so well, the Pentagon then paid $300 million to the Lincoln Group to plant fake news items in the Iraqi press. So we are exporting something to the Middle East. And with a Republican-run Congress, Senate, and a soon-to-be stacked Supreme Court rubber-stamping the executive branch, essayist Jonathan Alter has written, we are in danger of scrapping our checks and balances, not just for a few years, but for good. Add to that, our president recently admitted he ordered the National Security Agency to listen in on our phone conversations, supposedly just when the other party is foreign. 5 years ago, President Bush said, if this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier, just so long as I'm the dictator. So, is America still a model of democracy? Can we teach over there what is being eroded right here? Kathy Golden speaks with Peter Arnett, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with a career spanning 40 years. Arnett covered both Gulf Wars and is one of the very few reporters who has interviewed both Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Kathy talks with Peter Arnett on an article he wrote for Feet to the Fire, edited by Christina Borgeson.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, Peter Arnett. Peter, as I thought about the book Feet to the Fire, it would seem, even after Jeff Guckert and Maggie Gallagher and Armstrong Williams, they are not embarrassed at all that no one is allowed to hold their feet to the fire.
Well, that is true. You know, these administrations, whether it's the Johnson administration a long time ago during the Vietnam War, right through to this administration, you know, they're talking about the imperial presidency and its ability to build a wall against reality. I mean, that is a big problem today. You still have some really brave, competent journalists. I think the standard, the ability of the reporter in the field, that's the man or woman who goes to an Iraq or the Middle East. They're as high as they ever were, probably higher. My daughter's a journalist. You know, I started journalism out of high school. My daughter started journalism after graduating from Harvard. And a lot of other journalists are really well-educated, unlike my generation. They do believe. The problem is that the media has become so large, diffuse, and competitive that much of the media is seeking sort of a consensus or a reporting style that they feel would please the public. Now, of course, for a journalist, you know, it's the old story of, you know, killing the messenger of bad news. Journalists often cover bad news, and the public generally, you know, being human, would like to hear sort of nice news. And that's why the quality of journalism, I think, is deteriorating, because management is sort of catering to the public taste, which is not always beneficial. Clearly, what is happening in Iran is evident every day with the car bombing, the increasing insecurity. It doesn't take an investigative reporter to determine that the situation there is going bad. What happens today is that it is not difficult for the Home Office to sort of re-blend the reports from the field, to reshape it, shall we say, into what the Home Office feels is sort of adequate. Today, there are many, you know, cooks, you know, in the kitchen, and this tends to dilute the quality of the news, I think. What we're going through now is simply a reaction by the authorities, the Pentagon in particular, and the White House, to the political consequences of getting involved in an endeavor that turns out to be increasingly unpopular and an endeavor which is not succeeding. You know, this is what happened in the Vietnam War, was that the Johnson administration, then the Nixon administration, tried to put an information defensive wall against the reporting from the field, and that defensive wall is having a multiple of press conferences, of presidential speeches, of giving, you know, background briefings to select reporters in Washington to present the government official side of the story as a balance against the reports from the field. And it's the bully pulpit, and this ability has been exercised to a considerable degree by this administration because they are media-oriented and they are spin-oriented, and they have been, up to relatively recently, very successful at it. What is interesting to me is that even though the media, which initially, say, supported the war and went along with government policy, started to see the reality of what's happening in Iraq and the difficulties and the quagmire that it was becoming, the media started seeing that in 2004 and started indicating that. The administration didn't, and let's face it, it's only in the last 2 or 3 months that President Bush has even conceded there's been a limited amount of error over there. But on the other hand, the public ultimately has been reacting negatively to Iraq, as it did to Vietnam and Korea. So it is a sort of a basic reaction of a public that feels misled by the administration. It's hard for the media to fight a really competent, aggressive government information policy, Kathy. There is a sort of a drip-drip of reality, but in the meantime, there's more than a drip-drip, a flow of blood, which is really tragic from Iraq.
If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World, and we're talking with veteran war correspondent Peter Arnett.
It wasn't all that long ago that you took a great amount of heat for making the statement that the war had failed. You used the word failed, and you took a lot of flack for that.
You know, I've taken a lot of flack throughout my career, you know, starting in the early days of Vietnam, as have all reporters who've covered international crises by the U.S. government. Now, up to Vietnam, Kathy, reporters basically enlisted in the military or accepted censorship when they covered America's military adventures. In Vietnam, the generation of David Halberstam and Neil Sheehan and myself and Stanley Kano and others, we came into that crisis sort of demanding accountability of government decision makers, accountability of generals, because it was a sort of a new generation, a generation that had covered the civil rights movement in the South. And it was much more pragmatic about what the government was doing, much less casually accepting of authority. So we were controversial from the beginning. I remember President Kennedy tried to have David Halberstam pulled out of Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson did the same with me and others. So the media was confrontational. When you have a confrontational media, particularly in sensitive issues like war and crises, then you have a backlash from those most supportive of the government, and particularly from the government. So going in, when I covered Gulf War I for CNN, I was basically alone in Baghdad. Enormous criticism from right-wing senators and from the administration, simply because I was there in Baghdad and because I interviewed Saddam Hussein during the war and was reporting to the world. So when we go into Gulf War II, and I was helping NBC out with reporting, when I gave an interview to Iraqi satellite television and just commented that at that point, 10 days into the war, the U.S. war plan wasn't being very effective, that there was a guerrilla insurgent movement that had stopped the Marines dead in Nasiriyah, and I talked about the potential of civilian casualties, and that the reaction was very strident from many quarters, and NBC said, well, you know, we will stop using you. Ted Turner in Gulf War I, who was a strident personality, resisted, you know, the criticism and let me stay on, as did the Associated Press in Vietnam. But my ties with NBC were very limited, so they said, well, we won't use you. As far as what I said, it basically bore out eventually, but, you know, who was listening, and the impact of the whole American effort at this point has been tragic, as we all know, Kathy.
Mm. And Peter, you're one of the very few people on this entire planet who have spoken directly with both Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And with that in mind, is democracy forcibly exportable across cultural lines?
Not forcibly exportable. That I think that has been well proven. And the, you know, democracy, I think, is a wonderful philosophy to export, but to sort of drag it around the world is not really going to work. I mean, the British colonial system did leave in its wake, you know, a democratic tradition that was most of the areas in which it was planted, it didn't really grow so well. But at least the British, I'd say, a couple of hundred years tried to try to educate, you know, the colonial peoples that it had visited. It was, you know, where it was trying to influence. The direct, you know, exportation, certainly in the case of Iraq, hasn't worked. The attempt to do it in South Vietnam didn't work. I think it's a matter of, you know, of a sensible, you know, attitude towards specifically the people you're being engaged with. I think in South Korea, the Korean War, there were many South Koreans, many of them Christians, who did welcome the opportunity for independence. They did welcome democracy, and it has flourished in South Korea. It didn't in the North, but it has in the South. But in Iraq, there was no tradition of democracy. Loyalty in Iraq is to the particular sect you're a member of, Sunni or Shiite, or to the Arab idea of nationalism, or if you're Kurdish, to, you know, Kurdistan. I mean, there's just a multiple of influences tugging at the people of Iraq, none of which, you know, add up to democracy, as we're seeing as the authorities over there try to put together a government after the recent elections. At this point, they're not very successful.
Peter Arnett, I'm so glad you joined us on Voices of Our World today, Peter.
Kathy, it's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Can democracy be imposed by an occupying power? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.